In today's Sicha, we're going to learn what the purpose of the Beis HaMikdash is, as well as the responsibility to fix things that we can fix in our lives, not simply to complain about them. Al Pasuk Vayipal Atzav Rebin Yom Inochiv Vayev Kovinyom in Bochal Tzavorav. So the Pasuk tells us that when Yosef and Binyamin had this emotional reunion, so Yosef fell on the neck or the shoulders of his brother Binyamin, and he cried, and Binyamin cried on his shoulders. Now, it's very interesting because the word tzavor is actually a neck. So it's a strange expression that it should be that they fell on each other's necks and in the plural. Anyhow, it used to be Gemara, so the Gemara explains what were they crying about, not just the emotional reunion of two brothers of the same mother who hadn't seen each other for years, but rather the Gemara says, Bocha Yosef, Ashnei Mikdashin, Veheimam Rumozim, Veteva Tzavri Lashin Rabim, that Yosef cried over the destruction of the two Batei Mikdash, the temples that would be in Binyamin's portion of land, alluded to by the plural word necks, that they were going to be in Binyamin's portion of land and would be destroyed. Whereas Binyamin cried over the fact that Shiloh, which would be the site of the Mishkan for almost 400 years, that would also be destroyed, and that would be in the portion of Yosef. So in other words, each of them foresaw that there'd be a place of holiness, an embassy of God in this world, in each other's portion, which would not last indefinitely, and that's what they cried over. So the question we have to ask is, why is this described as tzavor, as the neck? V'hinei atam she'tzavrim ramez beis ha'migdash muv ha'medrash ala pasuk ki'migdal David tzavorecha. So in order to understand why the symbolism of the Beis HaMikdash, or the Mishkan for that matter, is the neck, is based on a pasuk in Shir HaShirim that says that it's your neck will be like the Tower of David. Ma tzavor hazeh, says the Medrash, why is it compared to a neck? Just like the neck is nosen begovo shel adam, kach Beis HaMikdash nosen begovo shel olam, just as the neck is towards the top of the person, so the Beis HaMikdash is the top of the world. Now, we've got to ask ourselves a couple of questions about this. Omnam mashakasa begava shaloilam, ain't pirusha shaloil begava yal kol ha'ilam, erkedipirish begemar ala pasugavain kesef of shachin. So when we say over here that the Beis HaMikdash is begava shaloilam, in an elevated position in the world, we're not saying that the Beis HaMikdash is the highest point on earth. Because we know that the Medrash comments with regards to the brocha given to Binyamin, uvain kesef of shachin, that Hashem will dwell between his shoulders, says the Medrash. So the Medrash points out that the topography is that there was a place called Ein Etam, the spring of Etam, that used to irrigate the mikveh inside the Beis HaMikdash. And the Beis HaMikdash itself was 23 amos lower than Ein Etam, which of course is very important just for the simple physics of how the water should be able to pump up into the Beis HaMikdash. The source has to be higher than the reservoir that it's feeding. So the Beis HaMikdash was 23 amos lower than the neighboring Ein Etam, which was obviously on a hill as well. Kitzavori, says the Medrash, Kitzavori shaladim shu begavi shalagufa l'shenomuch me'at me'harosh. Just like the neck of a person, which is at the top of the body, yet at the same time is lower than the head. So straight away you see that the neck implies something which is high in the anatomy, but not highest in the anatomy. Vadarabba. On the contrary, the Gemara indicates, Omri nachsevei purta mishum tichsiv v'vein kesefav shochein, ein loy noe b'shor yosem kesefav. In fact, the Gemara makes a point that it was dafka, somewhat lower than the highest peak in the immediate vicinity. As the Pasuk says, that the Beis HaMikdash would be vein kesefav, between the shoulders, and the Gemara makes the comment that the most beautiful part of an ox is the area of the shoulder, so there's a certain beauty associated with the Beis HaMikdash. But what's most important for us is the fact that the Beis HaMikdash was not designed to be at the highest point in Israel, or even in Yerushalayim for that matter. So therefore, when the Midrash told us that the Beis HaMikdash is supposed to be at the height of the world, it doesn't mean the highest point, but within an area that is considered high within the world. We still need to understand, though, what's the symbolism and why is this important and what's the big deal? What's the chap of being, so to speak, high? So straight away you should ask the question, what's beautiful or great or laudable about the fact that something is high but not the highest point? Surely if you want to give accolades, you say this is the highest, the greatest, you know, anything that is superlative. Why over here are we saying that what's beautiful and great about the Beis HaMikdash, the most beautiful part of the shoulders, which is not the highest point. Mimon afshach. Im ein meile begoivo. Ma mashbein bose. Shabbos hamikdash nosim begoivo shalayla. It doesn't make sense. If it's not a big deal to be the highest thing around, why are we making a fuss over the fact that the Beis HaMikdash is elevated? And if there is a value in being high, which seems implied in this Midrash, then surely, logically, surely the higher, the better. If height is a good thing, if altitude is a good thing, surely the greater the altitude, the higher the height, the better it is. So Mao Hatam Shoy Bes HaMikdash No Mukhesim Mashal Shama Bukhuri. So why would they design the Bes HaMikdash Dafka from the start to be 23 amos lower than the next door peak? Something doesn't add up over here. Is the Bes HaMikdash supposed to show supremacy, or is the Bes HaMikdash supposed to show humility? So in order to understand this, let's look at the specific symbolism of a neck, because the neck plays a particular role in our anatomy. In fact, it plays two roles. And once we appreciate what those two roles are, we'll see how they reflect the role of the Beis HaMikdash. In order to understand this, let's understand the role and purpose of a neck. The primary purpose of the neck is to be the intermediate, the bridge between the head and the rest of the body. The first way that this plays out is that the brain is the epicenter of the life of a human being. As long as the brain is functional, the human being lives. And how does the flow of energy go from the brain to the rest of the body? It goes through the trachea, through the esophagus, through the carotid and jugular. You know, there's various parts of the human that connect the head to the rest of the body, and therefore allow such things as blood flow and the spine, nerves, the nervous impulses that run the body, the breathing, etc. That's the first point, that it's the physical connection between the source of life and the living of the body. Number two, the second role that the neck plays is that it allows transfer of the intellectual processing of the brain to impact the rest of the body. The fact that at least the, so to speak, outer part of the intellect, you know, it's a part of the intellect that is designed to impact the rest of the body, as opposed to pristine intellect, which is purely for the sake of understanding. So the fact that, for example, intellect can influence emotion, the heart, which in turn can influence the rest of the body in action and reaction. So all of that, all of that happens because the intellectual process has to pass through what we call Meitzar Hagoren, the straits of the throat, the narrowing of the anatomy beneath the head before the body. And if you can cross that divide, then you're able to transform ideas into feelings and actions. Turns out then that the neck has a certain advantage over the head. What's the maida? What's the advantage that the neck has? Without it, without its functionality, the brain would be paralyzed. It wouldn't be able to share energy with the rest of the body, and it wouldn't be able to influence the body with the ideas and understanding that it has. So therefore, we have two points about the role of the neck. Thanks to the neck, the entire body can live from the energy that is sent out from the brain's impulses. Number two, secondly, that the body can follow the dictates and direction of the intellect which is within the brain. Were there no neck, were there no bridge between the head and the rest of the body, none of this would happen. Now you're going to say, okay, we get it. So the neck is functional, it's very important for the continuity of the body, but ultimately the brain is far superior, surely, to the neck in terms of what it brings to the body, in terms of what it can achieve. Which is why it's no accident that the head is the highest part of the body, because the physical anatomy is a reflection of the power structure and the spirituality of the person. Still, so when we talk about the greatness of the head, that's in terms of sophistication. It's at a higher level of sophistication. But in terms of purpose, to be able to achieve what a brain is intended to achieve, actually the neck has an advantage over the brain. And ironically, the advantage that the neck has is dafka due to the fact that it's at a lower level than the brain, that allows it to become this intermediary, this connection between the mind, the brain, and the rest of the body. In the notes, the Rebbe refers to a maimer of the Friedrich Rebbe where he says, madrega, level, indicates sophistication. For example, a person who's a great Torah scholar, maila indicates a certain ability or a certain asset that somebody has, which might be in spite of them having a low madrega. For example, very often simple people who don't have the madrega, the sophistication of complex understanding, very often have the maila of pure faith. So likewise, over here, the brain has the madrega, the sophistication of intellect, and of course being the seat of the energy of the whole body, but the neck has the maila of being able to translate that energy into what the body actually needs in order to survive and in order to follow the guidance of the mind. So now we can understand why the Beis HaMikdash is compared dafka to a neck, not to a head, not to the highest point in the system. So that's exactly what we want to illustrate about the Beis HaMikdash, comparing it to a neck, to indicate that the greatness of the Beis HaMikdash is dafka, the fact that it is lowered somewhat, rather than the fact that it is at the absolute peak of everything. Because the purpose of the Beis HaMikdash is not that it should be pristine and holy, but rather that it should be a conduit through which holiness and divine energy and light enters the world. To such an extent that the Beis HaMikdash is designed to influence even the lowest part of the world. That's why the Beis HaMikdash had windows which were designed that the light of the menorah should dafka radiate outwards, because the purpose of the Beis HaMikdash is to impact the rest of the world. That's why the Beis HaMikdash, on the one hand, is at a high point of the topography of Yerushalayim. On the other hand, it's dafka not the highest point, because we don't want the Beis HaMikdash to be too elevated or too beyond the scope of the world. Because if the Beis HaMikdash was so high, it would be incapable of impacting the world, it would be too aloof. And anoch haspurto, hayne b'shaychus v'kiru l'oilam b'chdei l'ho'iroi, ha'yisrei moshel ha'roish, sorry, l'ho'iroi chatzavar odom shal yidei zeh shu namuch min ha'yisrei moshel ha'roish, kim b'kiru v'laguf haru b'chines ha'mim mutzo u'mechabrom la'achodim. So the Beis HaMikdash is dafka designed to have proximity, physical proximity to the lower world, like the neck is designed to have proximity to the body, dafka to facilitate that the highest levels can be shared with the world and can be shared with the body. That's the purpose of the Beis HaMikdash, not to be an escape from the world, to be embraced by Hashem's revelation, but to be a channel into the world that Hashem's revelation should affect the world. That's on the grand scale, and the same principle applies to us on a personal level, that each of us has a Beis HaMikdash, as we famously know, that the purpose of building a Beis HaMikdash is not only to have a structure to house godliness, but that within each of us there should be an element of ourselves designed to house godliness within ourselves. So the same principle applies to us. Our nefesh elikis, our divine soul, our neshama, should not be completely aloof from our normal, ordinary activities. The goal is that our neshama should impact and engage with our daily experience, in order to have a positive impact, to refine and elevate the animalistic side of who we are, es guf aves chelke ba'olam, to elevate our physical body and even the area of world in which we live. And through that, the entire being of myself and the world that I live in all becomes a mishkan. It all becomes a place of divine revelation. So now we get it. We understand why the Beis HaMikdash on the grand scale and on the micro level is compared specifically to a neck, to indicate that the purpose and goal of the Beis HaMikdash is influence on the world at large and my world personally. Now we understand why the symbolism is that Yosef cries on the neck, plural, of Binyamin, representing the two Batei Mikdash, and Binyamin cries on his neck, representing Shiloh. Because at face value, surely they should have cried on each other's heads. You can imagine the symbolism. You can imagine the picture of them both resting their foreheads against each other and crying, or putting their hands on each other's heads and crying. Why dafka on the neck? Surely, if they're crying, the crying should be associated with the head of the next person, which indicates their greatness and their sophistication. But really, the point is, as the Chazal teach us in Gemara, where is it? Gemara Kiddushin, says, "Ani lo nivresi elo l'shamesh eskoini," that I, as a human, as specifically as a Jewish human, I was not created for any other purpose besides to serve Hashem. Ani l'shamesh l'hashlem eskavon eskoini bivrios evrios kol olamos. Which means I'm here to fulfill the purpose of why I was created and why all of the worlds were created, namely, which is to make this lower world a home for Hashem, a mikdash, a mishkan, a place that accommodates divine revelation. And this can only happen through our efforts, because everything is in Hashem's hands except doing what Hashem wants. Yira Shamayim, fear of heaven, translated into our into our behavior and observance. Shehem Yasudil Isbarak Vesachtainim Aldesha Kolechot Vechot Mehem, Yzakech is Gufoy Venafshe Habahamis Vechelke Be'olam. How do we achieve the objective, which is I'm only here in order to serve Hashem? By elevating my own animal soul, my body, and the portion of world that I live in, which is exactly what we're describing, bringing my neshama into the world to be its guide, influence, and inspiration. That's why actually it turns out that the most important part of the person is not so much the head as much as the neck, because that's what translates the ideals of the head into the reality of life. That helps us to appreciate why Binyamin and Yosef cried on each other's necks, not on the head. Firstly, because Al Roshah Shabbat Yisola Nishmas Ein Lifkois Nishmas Yisol Gam B'Shasachet Oisabam Neitoi. First of all, because the head doesn't need you to cry over it, because it can never be corrupted and contaminated. The highest part of the human being, the Nefesh Rikis, the soul of the person, as the Alter Rebbe says in Tanya, Ein Otzicha Tikkun Klal, doesn't need any work, doesn't need any improvement, and can never be corrupted. So there's nothing to cry about. Number two, second of all, the whole purpose of being Jewish is not to have a healthy head. The purpose of being Jewish is that the health of our head, which is guaranteed and immutable, should become the influence and impact the rest of us to be as healthy, which is represented by the neck. So what do you cry over? Cry over the neck, because that is, number one, what is not yet perfected, and number two, where our focus and avoider lies. However, there's another question. It's a beautiful explanation. It really is a beautiful explanation, not only of the nature of the Beis HaMikdash, but the nature of our purpose. But it does raise a question. Why does Binyamin cry over the Mishkan Shiloh, which is in Yosef's portion, which would be destroyed, and Yosef cries over the Batei Mikdash, which are going to be in Binyamin's portion and will be destroyed? L'cheira adrabba kol echad mehem olav livkoy salchubim beis hamikdash shebechel koy hu harei odom korev eitzel atzma. Surely logic says that if they had this prophetic vision, Yosef should have cried over the Mishkan that would be destroyed in his own area, in his own land, and Binyamin should have cried over the Batei Mikdash that would be destroyed in his portion. After all, the Gemara tells us, Adam Korev Eitzel Atzmoy, that there's no closer relationship on earth that exists than between a person and themselves. In other words, you care most about your own things. So surely the thing that should upset you the most should be what's going to happen, God forbid, in your own portion, if it's something negative. Talking about this concept of Adam Korev Eitzel Atzmai, the Rebbe just shows parenthetically how compelling that argument is, that people are close to and care about themselves. Just to show you how much we care about ourselves and how much it's even appropriate for us to care about ourselves when it comes to the mitzvah to love your fellow Jew. Even after you learn everything that Chassidus says in Tanya Periklamet Beis and Derech Mitzvah Secha and other places about the quality of how we should love our fellow Jew and how much we should love our fellow Jew. Nevertheless, at the end of the day, it's you should love your fellow Jew as yourself. That chof at the beginning, that prefix, is what we call chof hadimyon, which means as if. You can never love somebody as you love yourself. You should love them like you love yourself, but it will never be the same as you love yourself. Meaning that you will never love another person to the same extent as you love yourself. That would be unnatural. As the Alter Rebbe brings late on in Tanya. In the same letter where the Alter Rebbe speaks about how much you have to invest in tzedakah and how important it is and how you shouldn't limit yourself and you should go beyond all requirements of tzedakah, etc. What does he say? The Alter Rebbe says there clearly that that only speaks to the point that you are looking after your basic needs. But if you have basic needs, as the Gemara famously says, two people in a desert and only one thing of water, the person who has the water, chayecha koidmin, we say. Your own life takes precedence. Okay, that's all an aside just to illustrate how much people care about themselves and how it's naturally and even endorsed by Torah. So why then is Yosef crying about Binyamin's destruction and Binyamin crying about Yosef's destruction? Surely then each one of the two, Binyamin and Yosef, should have primarily cared about their own Beis HaMikdash that they were responsible for in their environment. And their primary concern should have been the destruction of that Beis HaMikdash. Why are they crying for each other? And while we're on the subject, there's another similar question that we could ask about Yaakov's behavior. Eitzarech Rahavin. Alaposuk vayipol Yosef atzavorov sheYaakov vayevkal tzavorov oid. So we know famously that when Yaakov and Yosef were reunited, Yosef embraces his father, he also falls on his neck, and he cries tremendously, cries a fortune. He said, Bezoya. Yezoya says something fascinating. That Yosef bochal beis hamikdash nechrov, v'zeh metaretz bezoya mashakos v'yefkat tzavorov oid, sh'oz hois b'chi enesef, as gam al galus basro, al galus achi achra. According to the Zohar, what was Yosef crying about? Not just the emotional reunion with his father after so many years, 22 years of not seeing his father, but he was crying over the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash, and that's why I said he cried oid additionally because he recognized that there'd be a second korban and a much longer galus, which we're still suffering today. So the Yesh Litmoya, according to what the Zohar is saying, there's an incredibly compelling question. Madua rak Yosef bochal churban Beis HaMikdash velo Yaakov? If this is a moment where they have insight, that one day the Beis HaMikdash will be destroyed, and Yosef is so upset about this that he cries tremendously, why does Yaakov not react at all? Doesn't cry, doesn't shed a tear, why not? V'tirutze shel Rashi, v'shem Rabbi Yisoy, Rabbi Seni, sh'Yaakov koras, sh'hoyokir yashma, harif yazer l'chere netirutz. So Rashi explains that at that point in time, Yaakov was so excited to see Yosef that he wanted to channel his incredible passion and love and excitement into service of Hashem, so he said the Shema. That works beautifully according to Rashi. It makes no sense according to the Zohar. In other words, Rashi is explaining the Pshat, so it's a beautiful explanation. But the Zohar, which offers us the insight that Yosef foresaw the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash and therefore was crying, that makes it all the more perplexing that Yaakov should not have joined him. Why? Let's go with Rashi's approach, which is you read the pasuk at face value that this is an emotional reunion of father and son who absolutely loved each other and now see each other after 22 years, and that's why Yosef is crying. So the whole nature of the crying is because of the emotion, and that shows Yaakov's greatness that he pauses instead to channel that energy towards Hashem by saying Shema. That would highlight the incredible dedication that Yaakov has to serve Hashem. Gam be'eis, The first time Yaakov sees his son, after thinking for so many years that his son was dead, that did not interrupt his connection to Hashem. And instead of getting involved in personal emotion, he davens. He says Shema. Not only does he say the Shema, but he says it with incredible focus and intention, as the halacha requires. That makes sense according to Pshat. We have elevated Yaakov to the incredible status of somebody with absolute focus. But according to the Zohar, according to the Zohar, that the issue at hand, the emotion at hand, is about the Churban Beis Hamikdash, the destruction of the Beis Hamikdash. How could Yaakov be impervious to that? And he can focus as if there's no worry in the world to be able to say Shema with complete Kavana. How's that an accolade for Yaakov? On the contrary, it should be a criticism. Biur hadavar. So the explanation is inyan abachir kipshut binyanei ha'olam ubichdei lahakel al haboiche. So the psychology of crying will help us understand this entire piece. The psychology of crying is that the person who cries feels better. That's the psychology of crying. It's a release. There's pent up emotion. There's tension, and when a person can release it, they actually feel that it's cathartic. Ochnir bechush shekasher adam beichal inyan ameitzar meiklay. So what happens when a person cries? It doesn't resolve the issue. It makes the person feel a release. As David HaMelech says in Tehillim, that dimasi lechem, that it's possible that the tears could be like bread. In other words, they satisfy me in a sense. To have had the opportunity for a good cry, after to feel good. It doesn't change anything. So, now that implies that if you have the capacity to fix a situation, then it's the wrong approach to cry to give yourself the release. As sometimes Chassidim would talk about the person who cries when saying vidui and then feels, now I've done teshuva because I cried. So I feel better because I cried. That's wrong. If I'm doing vidui, then I should be focused on what I'm going to do to change myself. So now, logically, if you see that somebody else is going through a process of destruction, you cry with them, you commiserate with them, you show empathy towards them. Because it's not your job to fix them, they have to fix them. So your job is to commiserate with them, but they have to do the work. You can't do the work on their behalf. So what can you do? So all you can do for the person is, perhaps if you have that kind of a relationship and you can do it in a pleasant way, you can rebuke them. In other words, you can give them pointers on what they should do to fix their self-destruction that they're going through. And second of all, you can daven on the person's behalf and try to conjure up divine compassion that they should be saved from their own issues. But the fact is that if somebody's Beis HaMikdash has been destroyed, we know, as we say in the davening on Yom Tov, that if there's a destruction of the Beis HaMikdash, it's because of misbehavior, averos. So they have to work to fix that. I cannot fix somebody else's averos. I can cry, commiserate, daven, give them pointers, but I cannot do the work for them. So if you've tried your best to help that person to fix their life and it's to no avail, now you can cry. Because it's just so sad and painful to see somebody who is stuck and does not know how to extricate themselves. That's when you see somebody else's Beis HaMikdash has been destroyed. Now, what if your own Beis HaMikdash has been destroyed? And whatever that means on multiple levels, you're in a chas v'shalom, a spiritual mess. Then, now it's not a time to cry. Like the famous Hayom Yom, Tova Pula Achas Me'elef Anochis. One action is more potent and more valuable than 1,000 cries. So therefore, if a person sees that their own Beis HaMikdash is destroyed, it's not a time for crying, it's a time for action. Do something, fix something, repair something. לבעד בימה הבחיה היא דמוי של תשובה, שעוז הבחיה עצמו היא תיקון ואינו של בינון, כמו שנה, משימי דימוס בין נידך וגוימר. Unless the crying is part of the תשובה process. Not חס ושולם to think that the crying is the full תשובה process, but if it's part of the תשובה process, then it's appropriate. But if omim, but the problem you have to be so aware of is that sometimes habichia machlish avidos mina migdash shelo beomer belibay ki kvar yasrich ivos habichia v'chulei. You got to be careful because if you're the one who has repair work to do, and you cry, you might now psychologically dupe yourself into thinking I've done my job. Look how amazing I am. I feel so bad about what I've done wrong that I've cried over it, and that's where you stop, and that actually becomes the impediment to growth. So crying for your own issues might very well be quite misguided. Now we get it. Why Yosef cries over Binyamin's destruction and Binyamin cries over Yosef's. V'Yakov loy bochal chur beisam yoshkim hayokere shmak Yakov v'abim shokol bnei Yisrael v'lochein hein amishkav hein beisam yoshkim hein bechelkoi v'lochein osak v'tikun v'bini beisam yoshkim. And now we get it why Yakov doesn't cry at all. So Yosef cries over Binyamin's issues because that's not within his jurisdiction to fix. But his own issues he dare not cry over. And likewise Binyamin with his attitude towards Yosef. And Yaakov doesn't cry over any of the Beis HaMikdash, the Churban Beis HaMikdash, because he's the father of the whole Jewish people. So the Churban Beis HaMikdash is something he has to tackle. So what does he do? Gets straight to action. He starts to say Shema. Shari'inin Beis HaMikdash Ushiye Ba'is Muchen Likorbonis. The Rambam describes that the primary purpose of the Beis HaMikdash is a place to bring korbonis. And saying Shema is, in a certain regard, like bringing carbonis, as the Gemara tells us. So that's why Yaakov doesn't cry. He gets straight to the business of, let's fix this. Why is Shema compared to a carbon? Ki ikin yin ha-carbon hu adam ki-yakim mikem carbon la-shem krishmum siz nefesh ebo limsa nafshe be'echa b'chol nafshecha afili noita les nafshecha. Because what is a carbon really? Karoiv le-hakriv, to come close, to bring a person close to Hashem with absolute dedication. What we call mesiras nefesh, the ability to say, I'll give up everything, including my own life, for Hashem, which is the theme of the opening part of the Shema. Vein lahakshos. Now, don't raise this question. Kem sherobru hakodesh, hamishkam hamikdash asin lechorev, hari kvar nigzera al zeh milamayla ma'efshe la'asos bo zeh. So now you'll say, one second, they are seeing a prophecy over here that the Beis HaMikdash will be destroyed twice, and that Mishkan Shiloh will be destroyed. So maybe they should cry, because it's already decreed, it's over, it's sealed, there's nothing you can do. And our whole logic over here is that you don't cry when you can do something. Well, if it's already a decree, Mila Maila, if it's Hashem's decree that there'll be a destruction, surely that means there's nothing left to do. If there's nothing left to do, maybe you are justified to cry. You can't say that. The Haloi Kvarom Chazal, very famous Gemara in Brochas, that says, "Afilu Cherev Chodom Unachas Atzavore Shel Odom." Even if there's a sharp sword at a person's neck, Al Yimona Atzmei Minorachamim, the person should not stop davening for Hashem's mercy. V'Afilu Lachar Gzar Din Efshal De'Avoyda LeKoroi. As we know very well, that even when Hashem has initiated a decree against us, there are ways, as we say in Avinu Malkeinu on Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, Kra Roy Gzar Dineinu, that Hashem can rip up the decree. So there's never a situation that is so far gone and lost that you say there's nothing more I can do. And there's a great example that we have for this from Tanakh. Like we find with King Chizkiah. The Navi came to him, Yeshayoah Navi came to him. And he told him that there is a Nevuah, which sounds like it's pretty confirmed, it's going to happen, that there's a Nevuah. What's the Nevuah? That he's going to die. Chizkiyo tells Yeshaya, take your prophecy and leave. I'm not interested, not listening to your prophecy. And then the Pasuk tells us, that Chizkiyo then turned towards the wall and he began to daven for Hashem's mercy. And his davening was effective. Like Hashem says, I've heard your davening. And not only did he not die at that point, but he lived another 15 years. 15 physical years here on earth, not some extrapolated concept of what life might mean. In other words, there was a gezeira and he could change it. And therefore, we understand that the message over here from Yosef and Binyamin is it doesn't matter what you've been told and even who you've been told it by and what authority it is on, and even if it's Hashem's own word, we never stop working and trying to change negative decrees, and specifically a decree with regards to Churban Beis HaMikdash, destruction of the Beis HaMikdash. Amru Chazal, Kol Dor Sheini Nivne Beis HaMikdash Miyomov, Maylin Olav Kilu Echivoy. The Gemara tells us that any generation in which time the Beis HaMikdash is not rebuilt, it is considered Chas V'Shalom as if we were responsible for its destruction. And you can apply this on a personal level. If the Beis HaMikdash in Yerushalayim has not been restored, that is a sign that my personal Beis HaMikdash is not the way that it needs to be. If my personal world was as it should be, if my personal Beis HaMikdash was hale and healthy, Mashiach would be here. So in other words, it's not good enough for us to cry for Mashiach, we have to do for Mashiach. When you reflect on these concepts that we have learned in the Sicha, the goal is not to make us feel bad and not to cause us to cry and to sigh and to groan, but rather to get us to move, to do something. Ha-ge'ula ha-protis, to go through a personal experience of ge'ula, of release from our own demons. Obinyan Beis HaMikdash she-benafsho, and to reconstruct the Beis HaMikdash within our own nefesh, meaning a place where Hashem lives in me. It's real for me. When each of us focuses on restructuring and reconstructing our personal Beis HaMikdash, that Hashem should live inside of me, that I don't do things which are contrary to what Hashem wants, and I live with inspiration and guidance of what Hashem speaks to me through His Torah, that speeds up the coming of Mashiach. That should happen and should be revealed, literally, as soon as possible.